Hello, dear internet strangers. Today is December 9th, 2022, and we are Talking in Obscurity, companion podcast to the blog Writing in Obscurity. I'm Kevin Carlson, and I'm joined by my co-host,
Steve Kubitz.
And today we are talking about Jeff Vandermeer's Annihilation.
Gotta be honest, this was a lot better than Mortal Kombat Annihilation, which I actually thought this was the novelization of the movie.
Of Mortal Kombat?
Of Mortal Kombat Annihilation. And I was very surprised there was no Liu Kang.
No fatalities.
Really. No fatalities. No animalities.
Babality.
Babality, whatever it's called in the where he turns in that really bad CGI dragon.
I think it's still a fatality.
Yeah, whatever it is. But yeah, this was not that. I thought I was going to get a fun little romp of a fighting tournament, and instead I got cosmic horror that left me horrified.
Night terrors. Just night terrors all the time.
My wife was so, like, annoyed by me talking about this and going, okay, you're kind of scaring me. Can we not talk about this?
Could you stop screaming in the middle of the night?
And I'm like, honey, you know I can't do that. But I love this book, and I love everything we cover, especially my picks. And
but this is my pick.
This is your pick, and I got to be honest with you, this might be my favorite book we've ever covered on this podcast. It was so good. It stuck with me for weeks. I finished it weeks ago, and I can't stop thinking about it.
Weirdly, to bring this up, like, we usually at this point talk about how whatever we read is really sad. And even while this book is very dark, it's not a really sad book.
No, it's not sad at all. It's actually a very, I wouldn't say uplifting, but it's just it's not sad. It's very, it's in a weird way, it kind of has a happy ending.
Yeah, she gets what she wants. Yeah. And it's clinically interesting.
That's a good way to describe it. Clinically interesting is a good way to describe it.
Doesn't seem like a great take. Like, oh, it's a clinically interesting book. But, like, when you get into it, you understand why it's so interesting.
What the thing about, like, not to get too, because we're, you know, it serves our intro here. The one thing about this book that just I love is that it just, when it just starts, and it's weird, and it never stops being weird.
Yeah.
And I just love it. Like, if you're a person that loves, like, weird, like, I think about last month, in October, we covered, you know, Hellraiser.
Yeah.
And, you know, The Hellbound Heart. And that's a profoundly sort of weird story. Mm-hmm. If you're into sort of weird stuff that just sort of is, this is going to be your bread and butter. Because it is just a weird story that never stops being weird.
Yeah, I think that, like, a good preview here, we're going to talk about how this book has a movie with Natalie Portman. We're going to talk about the Annihilation, the movie, a lot, which is a perfectly fine movie, nowhere near as good as the book. And a weakness in the movie, real quick, is it spends a lot of time outside of Area X, whereas in the book, it starts in Area X and it ends in Area X. She has, like, memories of things that happen outside of Area X, but she is always in it. I like that a whole lot. But I think we should get into what we love about this book.
Yeah. I mean, and it's perfect. That's a perfect. The thing you just segued on is perfect. Because my favorite, my main like of this book is that Area X is so unknowable. And it does not, it just is a force of nature that just is. And I love how profoundly little you learn about it. The more the characters learn about it, the less you know about it. Yeah. And it's brilliant.
More and more questions. Like, every answer it gives you just leads to so many more questions. Like, and it's bizarre. It's bizarre how talented Jeff Vandermeer is in creating that, like, so bizarre of an environment that, like, you know, you never know where he's going, but you're there for the ride.
Well, I think for me, why I loved Area X so much is, and this is a like, you know, and when I like the characters in this book, you know, I do. I like all of them. I think they're, you know, they're all, like, likable in their own way. But because of how crazily weird Area X was, all I wanted was to, you know, go investigate that. You know, when you watch a scary movie,
don't go in there.
Don't go in. You know, you want the character not to go in there because you know it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
This one, I wanted them to do the bad idea. I was the devil on the shoulder going, you should go in there.
Yeah.
You should absolutely investigate this.
Go down that deep, dark tunnel there.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Like, what could be? It could be interesting.
And that is what makes this story so cool, is that, like, Area X almost, in a way, becomes its own sort of character. Mm. And it's the character you want to see accomplish its goals the most. But the problem is, you don't know what its goals are.
Yeah, like it's an unknowable
thing. So as a result, even though you like the characters and you like all the little human beings doing their human being things, fuck it. I want to see what happens. I want to watch the world burn.
Yeah, I mean, you could turn into a plant if you go over there. Whatever. Find out. Like, let's see. A thing that I really like about the characters, the human characters, is they don't have names. The main character is the biologist, and there's the psychologist, the anthropologist, the surveyor. But like, they even explain, because we're following, it's a first person, all from the biologist's point of view. She even explains that their superiors encourage them to only refer to each other by what they did, their function on the team, on the expedition into Area X. And there's an entire insane reason for that. That, like, how sort of, like, hypnotic Vandermeer's writing is, you don't even seem to, like, question, like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. It doesn't. But, like, he's so convincing. They're like, yeah, you would definitely call that person the surveyor and never Cheryl.
Well, what's interesting is that, like, you talk about hypnotic, you know, hypnotism is a big component of this book.
Yeah.
So, you know, in a weird way, you as the reader fall into the same trap as the characters do, where you're sort of hypnotized by what's going on around you. And it's sort of one of my things, I also get the same thing. I love the fact that because you don't know any of the people's names, in a lesser book, a book that was like a worse book, you would be unbearably annoying that you didn't know these people's names. Why would you care? Mm-hmm. Because the book's so well written, you don't even care that you don't know these people's names. It actually works to its advantage because they become kind of placeholders where you start picturing, even though I think it's an all-woman, you know, it's an all-woman book. Mm. And for the, you know, you pretty much just still put your own, you think of your own whatever, you know, because you put it, they become placeholders. But you care about them despite the fact they don't know names.
This is a weird aside, jumping toward the movie again. One of my friends, love him, not like the highest brow of people. I'm not going to use his name, because if he ever listens to this, he'll kill me. But like, we saw the trailer for Annihilation while going to the movies to see a different movie. And like, it was Natalie Portman and everything. And like in the book, this expedition, Expedition 12, is all women, because Expedition 11 was all men. That's just how he set it up. So this book is all women. And, like, we're watching the trailer, and I was really excited for it because I love the book. And at the end, he turns to me before the movie starts and goes, another girl power movie.
Oh.
First of all, this is not, like, a girl power sort of story. They just are women. They are characters who happen to be women.
Yeah, yeah. This is one of those things, if you're a person that, like, even if you, like, look at it as like how people aren't really mad about the all-woman Ghostbusters movie. Mm. This isn't that.
Yeah, like, I think that this is the, not to get off into a weird soapbox here, but like, I think that this is actually a very feminist sort of story, because like, it doesn't draw attention to the fact that they're all women. They're just characters in this situation, and they all happen to be women. Because nobody ever questions any story where all the characters are men.
No, no.
Nobody ever says, oh, that's a real men power story.
No one's mad about the Thing being all men.
Yeah. A great example, because we did the...
We did Who Goes There?
Who Goes There. Nobody ever points out, like, that's a real manpower sort of story. Like, and I remember him saying that. I was like, yeah, that's not really the point that this is making. It definitely is not about girl power. It's just they all happen to be women. Which I think in of itself is the more feminist approach, where like, it does not draw attention to the fact that they're all women.
If anything, it's plant power.
Yeah.
More than woman power.
It's like, it is really weird plants going on.
Well, it's interesting because I, you know, not to throw back too much to what we spent off air, we were talking about, you know, some of our favorite episodes of this. And, you know, Cersei is a great example of a feminist sort of critique on, in that case, Greek myth.
Yeah.
And, you know, feminist has become this weird kind of dirty word to some people. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say that you're sexist if you think feminism is a dirty word, but you're sexist if you think feminism is a dirty word. But feminist in the sense that it truly is a sort of egalitarian book where, yeah, the women, they're all women. But it doesn't matter that they're all women. They just happen to be all women. And, like, it's so well done that even though all the characters are women, and I'm a fairly average Jewish dude, and even though every character in this book, I still found myself empathizing and relating and putting myself into this position of these women.
Yeah.
Because they're just so, they're good characters. That's the thing about, like, where I think some girl power, not, screw it, the Marvel, She's Not Alone, falls apart.
Oh, that whole scene.
Because it feels intently forced. There's nothing wrong with a good example of like a really powerful all woman like narrative. In this case, this is a perfect example of that, where they're all women, and it's a beautiful narrative. It's really well done. It's creepy. It's scary, and by the end of it, you almost at times forget that they're all women, and that's the best sort of compliment you can pay to any kind of story. You forget their gender. You forget, it doesn't matter. Their gender is irrelevant.
Yeah, that scene in Endgame. Even when I first saw it, I was like, oh, that's exciting. But, like, you knew in that moment that it was kind of an off note. And the reason it's an off note, it's the same feeling whenever your father uses slang of your generation.
Yeah.
It's definitely like somebody that's two generations removed using some youth. Like, it's me going and saying, yeet. It just sounds bad.
It also felt, you could just tell that was we're going to get all the women on our side, but some freaking executive producer was like, hey,
this scene's going to be amazing.
It's going to be girl power. You know what's interesting is, not to get on too much of a tangent, The Boys did a version of that scene a million times better.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
girls do get it done. If you ever have watched The Boys out there, that is the better version of that scene. And I think this story is an incredible version of truly feminist literature, where these women characters, they own their agency, and there's nothing, their gender is completely neutral, and it's and I mean that in a very positive, like, perfect way, where every character you meet and interact with, even the ones that aren't super fleshed out, not to get too ahead of ourselves, but they're still really good characters, and you sort of forget that
they're very believable.
And at times, like I said, I forgot that it was all women. Not because I thought they were men, but because I was so invested in what was going on in the story that it didn't matter.
And at times, you even forget that they don't have names.
Oh, I have them all the time.
Like, that, because you just start thinking of the biologist as the biologist, or the surveyor as the surveyor. And you forget that that's not their name. Nobody has a name. I think that's an amazing thing that happened in this.
Yeah,
we're really stalling getting into what we don't like about it, because we don't have much.
That's the problem. Is I feel so bad for whenever we do a book, and I only learned to read for this podcast, so I'm still new at reading, and I always want to try to come at everything very analytically. Where, okay, I'm gonna find things I don't like about it, and for most books I can find things, even books I love, I can find. This book is so good from start to finish. And I don't want to, like, talk about this perfect. It's not perfect. But it's just so good from start to finish. That I'm like, I was sitting there all day for the last 2 days with my little notebook going, what did I like? What did I like about it? And I'm like, okay, I kind of like that.
I mean, it's sometimes when you're reviewing something that you really like, I find, because I write a lot of blog posts, you sound very petty.
That's, yeah. And
nitpicky. And I think that's as a reviewer, that's the best compliment you can give a book. Like, when you're just being nitpicky, yeah, you can't think of things.
That's sort of my, I guess we're going to transition to our dislikes now a little bit. My main dislike of this, which is, again, super, super nitpicky, is that because you spend most of your time on the biologist and the psychologist, the other two characters, the surveyor and
the anthropologist,
they feel like cannon fodder. You pretty much know who you're supposed to follow, and you know who's going to sort of just be sacrificed.
Yeah, like, it's definitely a battle of wills between the biologist and the psychologist.
Which is a beautiful sort of metaphor of mind versus body.
Yeah. We were talking about how, like, I think that's kind of intentional, because the biologist sort of represents the body, and clearly the psychologist is the mind, whereas the anthropologist and the surveyor, those are human jobs, and that doesn't really apply to this world. So I think that the fact that they're less fleshed out is kind of brilliant, because like they're irrelevant to what's happening in Area X.
I like how you made my dislike honestly kind of a like now. You're right, I never thought of it that way. That is a, because it is a mind and body thing. These two jobs are intently...
Like, the anthropologist is in it the least. And what was the anthropologist going to study? Like, there aren't people there.
You made me mad. In fact, you just ruined, like, that's my main dislike. And now it's, well, actually, that's kind of brilliant when you think about it. Like, fine.
I'm going to go even further than this because, like, the surveyor, she surveys the land, right? That's what surveyors do. Like, they...
Well, I thought she was going around, like, surveying, like, knocking on doors about... Well, the surveyor, asking about, like, if they're going to vote in the upcoming election.
Surveyors make maps and they, like, they talk about the... They survey what the terrain is like and what the water tables are. That's what surveying is. That is even mocked by the fact that, like, the biologist reveals that, like, when she's reading all these other journals, not to get into the spoilers too much, that there are different accounts of Area X where the land itself changes. So, what are you going to survey? If the actual terrain can change, bringing a surveyor is useless.
It's literally bringing a... I am like drawing a blank, but bringing like a knife to a gunfight, like, it means nothing. Like, it's not going to accomplish anything here. Like, it's going to be just.
And she's only the second most useless
character. Yeah.
Like, the anthropologist is really
objectively useless, the most useless character. Like,
and the fact that, like, spoilers, minor spoilers, the anthropologist doesn't have much to do.
I think what's interesting is, you know, the one thing I'll say about this book. That if you're this isn't my dislike, because I loved about this book, but if you're a person that likes things wrapped up and a neat little package, to quote Homer Simpson, you're gonna hate this book. This book does not put a bow on anything. And if you're into sort of things being very, here's the ending and here's everything explained and here's how everything works and here's the thing,
this is how this happened,
yeah, you're gonna hate this. And though I'll say this, if you're reading this book, the way it builds and builds and builds, especially the tension, I don't know how you could possibly be mad about it being unknowable. Because being unknowable is kind of the main point.
Yeah.
But if you're in, like I said, that's the only thing I can think of. If you're into sort of stories being wrapped up neatly, this isn't for you.
Yeah, that's a fair critique, like, for that kind of audience. If you're looking for an explanation for why... No, this doesn't work. The movie will do that for you.
The movie... And
I feel like the movie, not to get too far off, there are a lot of hypotheticals, suggestions for why Area X is the way that it is. And I feel like the movie picked one, and they picked the most uninteresting.
The least interesting, like, thing you could pick, and they picked it. And it's funny because, I love the movie when I first saw it.
Yeah.
And I remember telling you, I saw it when it came out.
It was
2010. I was like, I really like that. I really enjoyed that. Like,
and I stood in the parking lot and said, it was okay.
And I was like, wow, I loved it. I loved the thing about it. It was so good. And I love Natalie Portman. And also to clarify, I was not the person that said, it's a girl power movie. I want to make that clear. I wasn't the person in the theater doing that.
It wasn't you.
No, that's not why, everyone.
We weren't even watching that movie.
Yeah.
We have to date never watched that movie together.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's one of my, friends that, like, he definitely voted Republican at one point.
Yeah.
But
why does... I loved it. I remember thinking... Because I didn't read the book until I saw the movie first. I love this movie so much, I bought the movie when I could get it on, like, digital. Because I don't own physical things anymore. And loved it. And then this book, reading it, I'm like, oh, I'm going to read the book. I'm excited to read it because I love the movie. Somehow, I look at my copy of the movie now, and I go, like, the shine is off the apple because of how much I love this book. And it made me like the movie less. And that is my main dislike. That is the dislike of this, because I'm like, how dare you be this good that you ruined something that I enjoyed?
Yeah, I mean, I love the first two-thirds of the movie. Like, I will give you that.
Yeah.
Like, go back and watch the first two-thirds of Annihilation. Okay, well,
dude.
It's caveat, like, not the very beginning.
No, it's like,
watch every.
It's not a linear 1/3, 2/3.
Yeah, watch all of the parts where after they get into Area X, all the way up until before Lena gets the lighthouse.
Yeah,
everything in the lighthouse and after, garbage.
Yeah, it's funny because I love before I read the book, I loved those scenes.
Yeah.
I thought, this is interesting, it's really good, it's so riveting. And also, I love Natalie Portman, love her as an actress. She's to date my longest term celebrity crush. You know, and she's always going to be that. I've had a thing for Natalie Portman since literally I was 12 years old. I'm now 35. I always joke to my wife that my wife's love of my life, but my longest term is Natalie Portman.
Yeah, I mean, and she's excellent in that movie.
She's absolutely incredible.
The movie is B- sort of movie.
It's funny. When I first saw it, I thought it was like a solid like A- movie. I loved it.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, yeah, I would even say it's like a C-.
Yeah.
Like it really, like because
it's trying to be nice.
And like that's like I said, I love the movie. And the movie now I'm like mad. Like it makes me mad. And I remember telling my wife like I'm like retroactively pissed. That like at this book, because it ruins something that I enjoy. Like this book is like the equivalent of a person pointing out that you can see the strings,
like the Starship Enterprise.
Like and it's like, oh god damn it, I cannot see it.
like can't unsee the strings.
Yeah, this book did to me. And like we know you can actually see the strings, and it's like, oh god damn it, you're right, I can. And because this book is so good, like I feel bad. We're supposed to be this is supposed to be the gripe section, and my gripe is this book is good, and it made me mad. And, like, it just, if you're out there and you haven't, if you're listening to this and you haven't read this book, I really think you should read it. One, if you're listening on Audible, it's like a 5.5 hour book, 6 hour book. Yeah. It's really short.
Thanks for teeing me up there, because my chief dislike is it's too short. It's a, like, normally I love a short book. I love hearing that Audible hopes you enjoy this program. I love the ending of that. Like, I get a real dopamine high. Of hearing
the most poorly, also the most poorly produced thing on Audible is the Audible hopes you enjoy this program.
This program, like that guy died recently. Not to bring this down, a couple years ago, and like they keep his voice because, like you
that's
know,
nice.
He's one of the original employees of Audible.
That's nice.
Like it's
not nice that he's died.
It's
nice
not
that...
nice that he died, but like, yeah, like normally I love a short book. Like I like quick hitting stories. I'm kind of intimidated by anything more like, oh, this is my favorite book. It's 45 hours long. Like, oh, boy.
We know it's funny. What's that expression? Was it was Roger Ebert said, a good... This is about movies. A good movie's never long enough.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a bad movie's always way too long.
Yeah.
And this is not long enough.
Yeah, it's not long enough. Because, like, I love this book. And not to get off too... Well, to get off base. Because, fuck it. The second book's awful.
I bought the second book after this because I thought, oh, I love this book. I'm going to read the second one. And I remember telling you about it. Like, I bought the second book. You're like, oh, boy, you're not going to like it. You're not going
to
like it.
The second book is just awful. And there's no way to, like, gussy that up. The third book is more like the first book. And at first, like, I had that false sense of optimism. Like, when I read the third book, and this is called the Southern Reach Trilogy, I was like, oh, that was almost as good as Annihilation. And then, like, as I got more distance from it, I was like, no, it wasn't. Like, it was 75% as good as Annihilation. It just seemed so good because, like, the second book was so fucking bad.
It's like the inverse of how, if you watch The Godfather Part 3 by itself, it's a fine movie.
Yeah, sure.
But it's compared to literally the greatest mob movie ever made and the greatest sequel ever made.
Mm-hmm.
So when you compare it to those two things, it's bad. But if you watch it by itself, it's actually pretty solid.
Yeah, no, I see where you're going.
But in this
that.
Case, like, you're comparing it to an amazing first book, which then makes the second one seem even worse. But then because you're such a dog shit sequel, the third one being objectively decent makes it seem like it's better than it actually is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird effect. The third one, I loved it. In the sense that because I got more of what I wanted from the first book. And I think that, like, my chief dislike of the first book is that if it were a little bit longer, I wouldn't have been jonesing so hard.
Yeah, because like I said, I haven't read the second book yet. I'm going to read it, and I'm going to be disappointed. You know, the thing about this book is that even though you're in Area X the entire time, you want to be in there more. All you want is to stay there. And I had the exact same reaction. Because I was so we both listen to this on Audible. We listen to everything on Audible. I don't know why we even, like, lie. We don't need, there's no reason to, like, cover that. Mm-hmm. I usually only listen to Audible when I'm either, like, killing time at work and I have, you know, nothing to do, or I'm walking or I'm working out. I don't usually listen to Audible just sitting around. Mm-hmm. Because I don't like doing that. I listen to audio all day for my day job. So I like having something that's usually background noise to what I'm doing. I like this so much that there would be times I would be sitting in a dark room in my house just listening to it. And that is, to me, one of the highest compliments I can give any book. Mm-hmm. If I like it so much that I'm staring at my phone going, I should really listen to this. That to me is like the high praise. Because I was so invested in this story that I could not listen to it. And it's so good. Like, yeah. I feel bad for, like, hitting how good this book is, but it's just so good.
Well, I think we should dive into the spoiler side, get into our analysis of the book. So we can tell you about all the little things that we really loved about it. And, like, building off of how I didn't want it to end, because I wanted to see where the biologist was going. Spoilers, we're in spoilers. This is your warning. Cut this off now.
Yeah, and if you complain about it, I will come to your house and I don't know, lick you. I won't do that. I'm sorry.
No, lick people. Like, post-pandemic.
Post-COVID, you can't lick people anymore. That's how the thing works. Actually, I think pre-COVID, you couldn't lick people.
No, I don't think licking people was ever appropriate.
Unless they want to be licked.
Yeah. I mean, but that's like a... Yeah, all right. We need to get off licking people. So what I was saying is, like, how much I love the... I was upset by, like, it just, the ending, it's too short. I really wanted to know where the biologist goes next, because, spoilers, she never leaves Area X. She decides at a certain point, I'm staying here forever.
This is where I live now.
Like, I'm just so interested in what's going on here. I'm just going to go explore Area X. And I was very much at the end of the book like, yeah, let's do that. What's over the next hill? Go see that. And it, you don't get to see what's over the next hill because it just ends.
What made me on the exact same page as you is whenever the final... I didn't know it was the final chapter. The last, like, 3 hours of this, maybe 2 hours of this, straight through. I was so into it. Mm-hmm. And so when, like, the final bit of the chapter, that is the last chapter, is she's descending into the lighthouse. Or is it not the lighthouse?
The tunnel.
And I'm like, oh my god, I can't wait to see what's going to happen here. I cannot wait. It's going to be so good. And then it's like, and then she descends and walks off. I'm like, what's next? Audible hopes you enjoy this. I'm like, are you kidding me? I was sitting there, like I said, alone. My wife was dog sitting. And I was so mad. And I remember being like, talking to my dog. Like, Yoda, can you believe this?
It's extended.
Like, the book just stopped, Yoda. And he's like, can I have some food? I really don't care about what you're talking about right now. Like, this means nothing to me. I'm a dog. But I was so mad. And it's funny, because it wasn't like I'm mad that it made me like the book less.
Yeah.
But it was just mad that I'm like,
why is it happening?
Like, what? No. It's like I said, when you are into something, you want to keep going. A good thing is never, it's never long enough.
So, like, to spoil for you a little bit, too, because you haven't read the other two, but, like, she definitely had more adventures afterwards, which we are never going to get to learn about. Like, it gets revealed that she did. But, like, I want to know what all those weird fucking adventures she went on was like. And it's just, you just will never get, he never wrote that. Like,
yeah, it's just,
that's very frustrating.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, for me, my main, like, sort of, like, if you're going to, like, analyze this book from, like, a more, like, technical standpoint of what it is, It's funny because it's this sweet irony in the book versus the movie, where the movie plainly says aliens.
Yeah.
It says it's aliens.
There was a meteor that hit.
Yeah, and that's aliens.
That's what caused it.
Sure. Okay, great. And ironically enough, and I mean irony in the truest sense of the word, the fact that they name aliens makes it less alien than the book, where you don't know what it is. Mm. Like, there's something really profound about the fact that you don't know what Area X is. And there's something very... like, the unknown versus sort of the rules of the game. You know, if you're a person that is constantly, like a scientist, for example, everything makes sense in terms of the scientific method. Everything makes sense in terms of here's how this works, here's this, everything.
You can break it down, you can experiment.
But everything follows this rule. And this story completely just twists that onto its head in a way that they never really explain why. And that makes it so, because the characters are all smart, and it doesn't do that bullshit like that a lot of movies do, where it's like, well, let me explain this to you for the audience, even though you're a fellow scientist, you would know this. Mm-hmm. This book completely is, these are smart people that are baffled by this world. And that is really cool.
Yeah, like, I feel like Jeff Vandermeer himself is legit a fucking genius. He wrote a character who is a scientist that feels like a real scientist. Because if you've ever met like an actual scientist out in the wild, they're weird people. And they get really into what they're doing, and they're very focused people, and they make those kind of breakthroughs. But like, they're not faking it. Their like whole existence is kind of focused on this. And I think that like the biologist is that pure sort of scientific character where she's not a good woman. She's not an evil woman. She's what I call a perfect, true, neutral sort of character. Her entire existence is she's self-contained, and her primary drive, her primary motivation is her scientific curiosity. Like, she loves her husband, who was on the prior expedition, and he died. Or seemed to die. But, like, this is where the movie gets it wrong, where they spend a lot of time with Natalie Portman's character, who's the biologist, in that, where she has an affair, and that adds fucking nothing to that movie.
It does not.
Story. It adds nothing. But, like, other than, like, it gives her a motivation, like, she's guilty that she betrayed her husband, which she really did love, and she goes to Area X to go rescue him. The biologist in the book legit says how she loves her husband, but the fact that he died in Area X meant nothing to her going there. Like, she's not going there to find out why he died.
No, it's irrelevant to her.
Like, she's going there because she's just interested in it. It's interesting for a character that, like, her scientific curiosity is greater than her sense of self-preservation, which makes her the perfect... It's unique because you don't really, like, see characters where they're so involved in their work, in their life of, like, investigating things that, like... At no point did I feel that I was too worried about what was going to happen to her. Like, I liked her just fine because she was interesting, but if she gets murdered in the next scene, whatever.
Well, it's because how little the character cares about themselves, like herself, and sort of the science is more important than my own existence. As a reader, you're in the same boat. You don't care. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's not like when you're watching a like Friday the 13th movie and all those campers are like, I just want to see Jason kill you. I don't really care about your existence. Like, you mean nothing to me. It's because you care about these characters, but the biologist doesn't care about her own survival instinct. You as a reader go, sure.
And like, and it's weird because like, it's not like she's self-destructive.
No,
like, she's not depressed.
No, it's just her intrinsic need for knowledge
is just greater than her
survival instinct.
Survival instinct, which is alien to most people.
Which is again the perfect way to describe this book: alien.
Yeah.
Despite the fact we don't know they're aliens. We don't know what they are. We don't know Area X is at all. But that's the best way to describe it. It's the ultimate version of alien because you don't know about this person's motivations outside of just, I want to know science. I want to know, I want the answers. And because every answer leads to like 10 more questions. And as a reader, that makes you like, you know, when you're, I think we said off air, you know, when you're watching a scary movie and you care about the characters, you go, please don't go into that room. No, don't do that. For love of God, don't. But this book made me the devil on the shoulder of the scientist going, you should go in that room. Keep going down.
See what's over there, man.
Go down the steps. What's the worst that's going to happen? You learn something exciting? Come on. This will be the greatest breakthrough in scientific history. Go do it. Do it. And it's not that I didn't want these characters to live, especially the biologist. I wanted them to live. I wanted her to live.
Yeah, she was interesting.
Yeah, she was cool. She was really fascinating. But I was so invested in Area X that I was like, I don't care. I want to know more. I don't give a shit about like, anything other than what Area X is. And because you only learn little nuggets of Area X, It makes it so, it's so much more riveting, because you're like, whoa, what's that? Like,
she gets very early on infected by these spores. And there is, she knows, she feels it in her mind and her body that it's changing her. And, like, she's just, like, okay with it. Like,
she's very on fine with the fact that she got infected by these things.
And the fact that she's okay with it, I'm okay with it. I'm like, great, let's see what these things do to you.
Yeah,
and like, I guess they sort of give her, like, superpowers, too, because
she can't hypnotize anymore, which is a big little
subplot. There's a whole subplot of how the psychologist is controlling the rest of the group through hypnosis, but, like, the spores give her the ability to just ignore the hypnotic suggestions that they're all under.
Which is actually a really cool subplot. In a lesser book, again, that would be a worthless, why does this matter? Yeah. Because it's so well done. Like, I remember the first scene where you realize that everyone's being hypnotized and the biologist isn't. I remember thinking that was so cool. It really was like a cool little, like...
And you can tell how intelligent of a character she is because she's quick enough on the uptake that she realizes, oh, they're all being controlled, so I need to act enough controlled.
So they know that they don't think that
so I'm... So the psychologist doesn't know that I'm immune to her.
Which is, again, super well done. It's so clever.
And I love the scene where the psychologist is dying at a certain point. And the whole reason the entire book is called Annihilation is that the psychologist, who is ostensibly the leader of this, had a key word that would cause any of the team members to kill themselves. And it was annihilation. That was the word. When the biologist is glowing at this point, because that's what the spores are doing to her, the psychologist is so afraid of her that, like, she's injured and she knows she's dying, but she sees the biologist coming and immediately yells annihilation, and it doesn't work.
Which is just a beautiful... And you as a reader know it's not going to work, but because the character doesn't know that, it's so horrible. That scene is so terrifying. It's interesting because in the movie, the scariest scene to me is the talking bear.
Yeah.
That's the scariest scene of the entire movie. It's so... I still think legitimately well done.
Yeah, like, I love that scene.
Yeah. And like, but in the book, that scene is the one that got stuck with me the most, the annihilation scene.
Yeah. And you're following the monster at that point.
Which, that's how good, again, the writing is. You're on the monster's side, but I just... Because you felt the terror in the annihilation. Because she says it, like, I think 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, like... like, you knew it wasn't going to work because she hasn't been under this person's control
for the entire time. For most of the book.
And then she realizes, oh, that was the thing that you were going to say that would make me kill myself.
Yeah, it's just, it's such a well-done scene. And I think, like, again, talking about, like, you know, the overall theme of the story, so much of it is, to sort of relate to it, is that isolation of being, because she's not hypnotized anymore, she's actually more isolated from her team than in the whole, or isolated the entire book. Because they're trapped in Area X. They can't get out, so they're isolated from the world. She then becomes isolated from her own team because she's immune to the hypnosis.
Yeah.
So, like, isolation is such a main component of this book. And I think about this. She's now, after everything, all things shakes off, she's alone in this world. What's more isolating than being alone in a world?
Totally alone. And, like, my favorite scene in the book is this. So, the biologist is on the 12th expedition into Area X, and they even sort of definitively somewhere come down on, I don't know if it's an annihilation or if it's in a later book, but Area X has been there for 30 years. And there have been 12 expeditions. And all of the expedition members of every team have these journals that they keep all their logs in, their thoughts and everything. And for whatever reason, even the expeditions that did come back and people survived, they never had their journals. And the biologist finds all of the journals in the lighthouse. And that scene is amazing because she's talking to the reader. Because it's all in first person. Like, this is her journal. And she goes, can you imagine what I felt the moment that I found all of the journals? Because, and she even describes it very clinically like a scientist. The pile of these journals was 16 feet in diameter and 12 feet high. There are more journals just piled up than there could possibly have been. 12 expeditions of teams of 5 or 6 over 30 years. Where are all these journals coming from? And I love just how, like, there's no explanation for it. And she starts reading them and they're like, they're all different. And, like, nobody really explains the time of when they came into Area X. Like, I love that scene so much. And I love how she sort of starts breaking the fourth wall. Like, maybe you're reading my journal on this pile now. And, like, it sort of, like, pulls you into the story.
Well, it makes you feel like you could be a character in this story. And, again, the one thing I like about, you know, we talk about the main theme. I would say the main theme of this book is the unknown.
Yeah.
And because Area X does not play by any of our rules, it is the ultimate unknown. And if you're a person of science, if you're not a scientist, you just like science, science always plays by the rules. That's the beauty of science. It works because it just works.
Yeah, it's objective.
And you can learn things, and you can evolve, but it's still, even the things you learn, play by the same rules. This is what's the scientific method.
Mm-hmm.
Everything plays by the same rules. Area X basically looks at you and goes, "Are your rules? Yeah, fuck you. I don't care about your rules." And that the ultimate version of this is this person of science so riveted by it.
Yeah, because it's not objective.
And like, if you're a person that all your life has been about science and sort of learning these sort of rules of the world, and all of a sudden you're in this area where you're still on your world. It's not like they went to a different planet.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, the rules are out the window. You know, what? There's a Josh Ritter there. The rules of the game, the rules of the first to go. And this is an example of just, the rules are gone. And if you're a person that's like so into this, their excitement becomes your excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And as it's funny, because as everything's going batshit crazy in Area X, the biologist is so excited about it. Which makes you excited about it. You almost feel guilty for how excited you are about all these people going through this horrifying experience. Because
yeah, a lot of them just die horrible deaths.
Yeah, but it's riveting. Because yeah. It's so interesting.
I think it's time to get into our parting thoughts. And like, I think the best way to do to end this is to really compare it to the movie version of it. And I love how the book kind of ends, just like, it ends. And like, I love her relationship with her husband in the book better than it is in the movie, because in the movie it has the subplot of like she cheated on her husband, she feels guilty, and she wants to go rescue him or find him or like, because he's still sort of alive.
He's alive-ish in the movie, yeah.
In the book, he came home unexpectedly. They had sex. That happens in the movie, and then they came and took him, and then 6 months later he died of cancer, and they all died of cancer.
Yeah,
just. And then she went on it because she went on the 12th expedition because it was interesting to her. Not to find out what happened to him, really. And, like, I love that she even says that, like, her husband asked her once, "Do you love me? Do you need me?" And she reveals that she did love her husband, but she didn't need him. And her follow-up line is, like, and I thought that was kind of the point. That was the thing that everybody wanted, was you love somebody, but you didn't need them. That was the healthiest thing. And you can't really, like, disagree with her. She's profoundly weird, but I think that that's, like, a true statement, that the healthiest thing is you love somebody and you want to be with them. But, like, your whole world isn't them.
I always look at the healthiest relationships as you love them and you want them and being with them is the best. But you don't need them. Need, like a needy relationship is a bad relationship.
Mm.
When that becomes codependent. And that becomes a situation where like in a weird way, I thought the movie kind of made them a little more.
Yeah, it was a little more of a sick relationship.
Because it was mostly just guilt-based. And listen, I'm Jewish. I love a good guilt-based anything. My life is being guilty. But you know, for the sort of the powerfulness, what makes the book so powerful is that I love you and I want you, I don't need you. Which makes her trying to find answers, not because she really needs her husband or feels bad about it, but because she wants answers. Because
yeah.
The answers aren't about her husband, the answers are about Area X. And Area X happens to involve her husband a little bit.
I weirdly love that, like, so she finds out that her husband, the husband that came back, wasn't really her husband. It was a sort of clone. It's a thing that Area X can apparently do. And her real husband never left Area X because she found his journal. And, like, he just decided to go off and keep exploring it. And I love her weird pride in him. Yeah, I too wouldn't have come back to me.
Because that's the thing. They're both people of science. They're both people that, of course, they would want to get more answers. And there's something oddly, and it's weird, in a weird way, it's very romantic that they both came to the same conclusion.
I'm going to stay here forever.
I love you, but I don't need you.
Because this is so much bigger than us.
What I need are the answers to what this is, what Area X is. That's a need. Because it's unhealthy. Need is inherently, in this situation, unhealthy.
Yeah, because, like, this is definitely not helping her self-preservation. Area X is inherently dangerous. It's not a fucking Wonderland. There are just weird shit happening all the time. Like, I love when she's going through the lighthouse, and an epic battle happened here. Like, there's blood sprayed everywhere. She's just clinically like, somebody installed shards of glass on the outside of this as though they were being attacked by water creatures. I wonder what that was about.
Which makes you, as a reader, wonder, what was that about?
Like, what happened in this fucking lighthouse?
You know what's interesting? If this were a worse book, it could feel like the best story happened off screen, mm-hmm. quote unquote. But because this book is so good, even though cool stuff happened and you don't see it, you don't care. It just makes you want to know more. That's how well written this book is. You know what I talk about in Game of Thrones?
Mm-hmm.
How objectively, like, the kingdom is the least cool part of Game of
Westeros
Thrones.
Westeros is
literally the least cool part of this universe. But and you sort of, once you learn that, you're like, okay, this is stupid. This, even though cooler stuff happened away from you, because it's so well done, you sort of just go, oh, that's so cool. I'd love to know more.
Yeah, I love the whole scene of her going through and seeing that these people had this whole epic last stand against some sort of aquatic-based enemy, and apparently lost. And she's just like, that's somebody's shoe.
Meat.
Like, that's somebody's corpse. I don't know what this stuffed bunny is about, but, like, okay.
Whatever makes you happy, I guess. Yeah, there's just something to be said about so much of this book. The more you learn, the more you don't know. And that is so profoundly terrifying. Even though you know, obviously, a person wrote this. It's fiction, so there's no... I love the fact that it doesn't spell stuff out for you. And it's funny, because there are certain books I don't like that stuff's not spelled out. If there's a person listening to this a lot, one other book you said you didn't like the fact that it didn't tell you stuff.
Sure.
But this book is so good that I actually like the fact that it's unknowable.
I think all of the, like, really interesting scenes really happen in the lighthouse, and, like, all of it's interesting, but, like, the stuff really crescendos at the lighthouse. Like, the confrontation with the psychologist happens at the base of the lighthouse. The journals are found in the lighthouse. The epic last stand, apparently, that happened in the lighthouse. In the movie, she finds out it's aliens, and then she kills the alien with a white phosphorus grenade and stops Area X from spreading.
And that's
the end of the movie.
Which is just not interesting. Like, that's objectively not interesting. And I think that's, like, such a... It's funny, because I actually liked it when I first saw the movie. Like, oh, that's cool. Like, it's an ending. That's nice. I didn't love the ending, but it was an ending. And I didn't hate it. But this book made me retroactively hate the ending of the movie so much.
Like, there's a whole, like, scene where somebody was saying, oh, so artistic, how it was, like, sort of mimicking her. I'm like, yeah, it was on the nose. Because the whole thing about Area X is things mimic things unexpectedly. Like, there's a dolphin with human eyes, and there is the plants with human cells, and, like, this weird mimicry. And the movie legit just shows this metallic alien thing mimicking Natalie Portman. And I was like, it took what was subtext and just made it text.
Well, you know my motto, writers use subtext, they're cowards.
Like, it was... Like, definitively, just, this was the subtext of the story. See it in motion. And I remember somebody saying to me, like, oh, it's so artistic how it did that. And I'm like, yeah, it was really ham-fisted. Very ham-fisted.
Yeah. I'd say that's sort of probably the best logical endpoint of this, is the movie is very ham-fisted, and by the book is this beautiful, subtle little kiss.
Yeah. Like, every mystery, like, the visuals in the movie are amazing.
Oh, they're beautiful. And Natalie Portman, I cannot say this enough, incredible in it.
Like,
she's so talented. Like, she kills it.
The talking bear in the movie.
Oh, it's terrifying.
Legit creepy. Terrifying. The actual narrative of it is...
It falls short.
Really just like the paint-by-numbers version of this story.
Yeah, it's like someone read the book and was like, I can make this a little more concise for the general audience. Which is ironic because it bombed. The movie bombed badly.
Yeah, like people thought it was too high concept, too like...
Which is funny given the fact that like the book is... much more high concept.
Like, way weirder. Like, what if this non-objective space existed within just reality, but not quite part of reality, but,
like, it's one of those things where, you know, general audience, they're not always right.
Yeah, and, like, a thing that, like, really, I really disliked about how the screenwriter did it is that he didn't really... So he read the first book, and I believe... I was just looking this up, that the other books hadn't been created yet. But he didn't ask the author, like, where does this go? He just wrote his screenplay based on what he thought was happening.
What happened, yeah.
And it is the complete opposite message. Like, he just didn't... He never read the other ones, which they're not great. So, you know, I do agree that the
second... He didn't miss much.
But still, it's like... I hate it when screenwriters... Like, oh, I wanted to make the story my own. I'm like, well, then write your own fucking story. Like, come up with your own original concept and you do whatever the fuck you want. But, like, if you're adapting something, you should at least get the inherent message right.
Yeah, I think that's... It's funny, the weakness of the movie is that it missed the point of the book. And that's the worst sin of any adaptation. Yeah. Is if you miss the general soul of what the property is supposed to be about... How can you possibly do it well?
Yeah, because the point of the book is Area X is unknowable, and it's bigger than any... It's not just bigger than any one person, it's bigger than humanity in general.
How could it not be? It breaks every rule of Earth.
Yeah, and the fact that the movie reduces it to, oh, it's aliens that cause it, and that white phosphorus, apparently, with the head alien there, stops it.
Which is just... Yeah, it's funny, because I didn't love the ending, I liked it. But it definitely, like I said, the book definitely... cheapens the ending of the movie because the book is just so much better.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it.
Yeah.
I think that we've talked this
to
our conclusion here. So it's your pick next. What are you gonna?
So I have to change a pace. You know, this is a fiction book, a great book. Yeah. I've decided to pick a nonfiction. It's Rob Delaney, who's a comedian. It's called A Heart That Works.
Yeah.
It's a riveting, uplifting story about the death of his infant son, who had, I believe, a heart defect.
Mm. Back to sad.
Yeah, back to sad. But I saw an interview a couple weeks ago when he was on one of the new shows, Good Morning America, one of those new shows. And it was him talking about his son and talking about writing the book and how cathartic it was for him. He said he did therapy and it didn't solve any of his problems. No, not that he is against therapy. It just didn't help this particular issue.
I just he did therapy. It didn't help.
Yeah. And he basically admits that, like, the only thing that really helped him feel better was writing it out. And writing it in the way that he could, like, make jokes and be funny. Because he's a comedian. And not, like, making light of what happened, but he could finally just sort of breathe a little bit and make sort of his voice of what he... to talk about what happened. And the interview really moved me. And not that it's funny. I don't have kids. Never, you know, never lost a child. Mm-hmm. But it actually... I cried watching the interview because it was just so powerful watching this dude... who is so funny, talk about this really serious thing. And so I'm like, the moment his book came out, I bought it, and I have to read it, and we're going to cover it for next month.
Sounds good. Without just what you're reminding me of, there's a video game called That Dragon Cancer, and I've never finished it, because That Dragon Cancer was this guy, a guy's a video game developer, and his young toddler son died of cancer. And it really is about what that was like, that whole journey. And I got an hour into it, and then I cried for 3 hours, and I've never turned it on again. So I expect that's what that book is about.
I'll be honest, we're probably going to cry. Let's get ready for the tears, and we'll soak our tears in the whiskey of the month, McConnell's Irish whiskey.
Yeah, that's what we're drinking. Now we're just gonna reveal that all those clicks and sitting downs of glasses, we drink whiskey during this.
So there'll be next month. There'll be different whiskey, probably.
Yeah,
and we'll go from there.
But like this one, McConnell's Irish whiskey. Tune in next time to find out what whiskey we're drinking while talking about books next month.
But yeah, like I said, looking forward to it. And thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll see you next time.